Hi, this is Elmore Leonard. I'm listening to Film Sociology, and it's a real program. It's great.
It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the multiplex and the art house. What's new on video and streaming, and you might also hear about some dead people we like.
We don't have time for dead people we don't like.
Anyway, this is Film Sociology, where you'll find out what's the next cinematic marvel.
It was unbelievable!
And what's just a movie.
Shut up! My God, you have no freaking life!
Okay, here's your host and my dad, Matthew Soucy.
Hello there, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Soucy. This show is available on iTunes, and like all of the podcasts here at WFYI, available on Spotify. We will grab a pencil in a little bit. We're going to bring back an old segment we have not done in a while, but I need to start with not one, but two films that didn't meet expectations, or my expectations, so take that for what it's worth. But I want to start with, I think I owe, to a certain degree, and yes, a critic is saying this, I owe an apology of sorts to IFC Midnight. They have released a film this week called Burial. And for pop culture fans, if you want to see a 35-year-old Tom Felton, there's that aspect of it. This is written and directed by Ben Parker, and it's a story of a group of Russian soldiers who have to take Hitler's body to Moscow for Stalin to see. There is a ritual of in Russia apparently that you need to see your enemies your defeated enemies in the eyes or something like that. But anyway, it is a mission. The film starts with a home invasion in the modern setting where a young masked thug is going to invade the house of an old English woman, or so we think, and we find out the woman is capable of taking care of herself, and he knows her secret. She was at one time a Russian soldier. And then the story is bookend by the modern settings. I don't think it's necessarily needed. But yeah, we have this group that is going to be taking Hitler's body from Germany to Russia. And there is talk early on of werewolves. As it turns out, that is a slang term for scattered soldiers, isolated soldiers of Polish and German persuasion. And man, I was really hoping for actual werewolves because of IFC Midnight, the label. And I had expected to see, and I've seen some decent Midnight movies. And my brain went there, and it didn't happen. In fact, there's a moment where you see a soldier with a kind of a wolf garb on its head attacking a wandering soldier. So I hate to say it, I think, because Burial turns out to be kind of a procedure, you know, a military mission film with your ensemble of in this case, a young female upstart, the cocky older male soldier, the sensible one. And there's some fairly violent gun scenes in this film, which I guess that's how it got the IFC Midnight. But I kept thinking as I was watching this film would be more fun and entertaining if there were actual werewolves. Plus, we get this moment, and it's not really given away much, of we keep hearing about the remains. Oh, and the fact that Hitler's body has to be buried every night. Now, it's kind of like why you have, you know, if you're sleeping outside, why you hang your food high every night. But the procedure of burying the body and then eventually the opening of the body. And I think I wanted zombie Hitler. I think if we're not going to have werewolves, we're going to have zombie Hitler or werewolf Hitler, I guess it would fit the theme. But this film could have been way more bonkers and way more entertaining, I think. But it was for the most part, a violent military procedure film when it should have been, I think, more. And I think probably because it had the IFC label. So I am sorry if I misread you, IFC Midnight, But I think you could have made a much more bonkers, entertaining film with actual werewolves. So there you go. That open. Burial from IFC Midnight. Sorry, not sorry. There's that. The other film opening this week is called Gigi and Nate. And it is the story of, I don't believe it's based on a true story. It doesn't really matter because every other film is based on a true story. But Nate is, we find out, is a young man full of life and vim and vigor comes from a very hardworking family. Dad's hardly there because he's always working. They have a beautiful cottage home. This film should get a knighthood from the Tennessee Tourism Board. It's kind of like The Horse Whisperer and Montana. Man, this film loves the Tennessee countryside. So we have, you have a nice house and you have a summer house. It's one of those kind of HGTV summer homes where us normal folk would look at it and go, that's a house. That's not a summer cottage, but it's a house. So we have the siblings and the friends, and the guy meets a girl right out of the gate. And young Nate does a dive off a cliff and wrecks his ear, and it turns out to his brain starts to swell, and he winds up paralyzed. So we fast forward to some time later. Nate tries to kill himself by falling out of his wheelchair into a pond, kind of like how he got his paralysis in the first place. And then he winds up getting an emotional support monkey to work for him instead of a dog. And that's kind of where the story goes. Nate is played by Charlie Rowe. He's recognizable in this. This is one of those films. It's there's a lot of praying and Americana and good feelings you're trying to persevere over. The parents are played by Marcia Gay Harden and James Belushi, Jim Belushi, everyone's favorite John Belushi's brother, pot farmer. Diane Ladd shows up as a drinking, feisty grandma. So we have a few names that carry the weight of supporting roles. And we don't really know why Nate wants a monkey. We're not informed of that. There is a place that trains animals. In this case, mostly we're used to training dogs. But in this case, it is a monkey. And there are times where the film looks like it's going to veer into Hallmark Lifetime territory, or, you know, it's going to fall into the kind of Christian family films trope and teeters, but doesn't quite always go there. There is tension between the monkey Gigi and the dog Banjo. To a certain degree, because of the title, we see Nate's journey more than we see Gigi's. We see Gigi's at the beginning. Gigi was working in a traveling circus and not treated well, and then eventually is trained. So there's working the relationship between the boy and his monkey, which I'm fine with. I'm down for that. How it affects the household, especially the dog. There's a couple moments I have to admit. There's a scene where the dog and the monkey meet at the same time, Banjo and Gigi, and it looks like a CG chase. And I'm still not adjusted to that. I didn't see Call of the Wild, so you know I have fresh eyes in this aspect. So I know there's a little bit of mixture of CG, I believe, with the actual animals that was distracting. Because you have Jim Belushi, he almost teeters into sitcom dad territory because, you know, the monkey is wrecking his normal life, even though he's spending too much time on the road. And he and Marcia Gay Harden have to have cinematic spousal arguments, which are for the most part downplayed. And so you think this is going to be the story. You think it's going to be the family and especially the boy, Nate, adjusting to life with Gigi. And I would be fine with that. And then about halfway through the film, there's a moment where he is grocery shopping. Nate and Gigi are grocery shopping, and Mom shows up. Oh, and he meets a girl. The girl he met, I love movies. You know, the girl Nate met before his accident in the summer town, you know, the summer resort town, shows up later working at the grocery store in Nashville that he lives. Anyway, that happens. But anyway, so there's a scene in the grocery store, really nice scene of reconnecting, meet cute sort of thing. And then a Karen shows up and blasts Nate for having a monkey in the store. and animal control shows up, and it starts to go down the path about animals' rights, and there's a court scene, and there's a protest outside their house that has January 6 feelings about it, and it just turns into a very important film, a VIF. And Nate has to do a monologue in front of the courts, and it just goes. I think he should have just stuck with A Boy and His Monkey. But we get into the heavy message movie about animal rights and choices and freedoms, and so much. The film is a shade under 2 hours. You could have, I think, if you had sliced off the second half and made it 90 minutes, it'd have been solid. So here's the other thing. I will say the one aspect of Gigi and Nate that I kept looking at, the girl, the woman, who we find out is an advocate and, you know, kind of fussy busybody, I called her Karen. At first I thought it was Pamela Ferdin. Now, if you of a certain age will know the name Pam Ferdin. She was a child actress in the 60s and 70s, probably best known as Felix Unger's daughter in the TV series The Odd Couple. She was the voice of one of the voices on Charlotte's Web. She was the voice of Lucy for a while in the 70s Peanut series, and eventually gave up acting and became an animal rights support activist. And she's got a website. You can check that out. And I thought it was her. I thought, okay, there's a nice bit of stunt casting as somebody who is going after animals and attacking people who like monkeys. But for all the wrong reasons. And I was wrong. I look up, and it's actress Welker White. And I'm like, where do I know her from? She was Lois in Goodfellas, everyone's favorite drug mule who has to have her lucky hat. And it just made me tickle. She's done a handful of films since Goodfellas. She was in The Irishman, which I need to revisit, all 4 hours of it, 3:45. And she's effective in a role that, you know, I think in a part that derails the Boy and His Monkey aspect of this film. So, yeah. And by the way, no Monkey Shines reference for you George A. Romero fans. Sorry. But, yeah, what could have been a Boy and His Monkey inspirational picture becomes a very important picture. And that's kind of a bummer for me. So, yeah, Gigi and Nate also opening this week. Okay. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. An old segment. We've not done this in a long time, but I found a copy of this on DVD, and I wanted to go back into the archives. Yes, where we find the archive editions of movies on DVD and Blu-ray, or as Kobe used to say, the kid in college years ago, y'all burn that for you for like $5. I found at a certain store, rhymes with calf price books, the 1962 Hammer horror version of Phantom of the Opera. And what does this one have that others don't have? Because I still like the Claude Rains one from Universal. Herbert Lom is the title role. Michael Goh is everyone's favorite Alfred from Joel Schumacher's and Tim Burton's Batman. Plays the sinister opera writer who takes Herbert Lom's work and makes it his own. Those are the two familiar faces in this. There's some nice moments of sabotage early on, and because it's Hammer in the early 60s, there's a couple of decent kind of special effects. There is one effective stab. There, the Phantom has a minion with him who does some of his dirty work. And there's a stab to one character in the eye, but it's from the back of the victim. But it looks good. It looks good on that. There's a hanging body that it flies through the set piece of a show. There's no music, so that's one thing it's got going for it. Is there's no Andrew Lloyd Webber. Hi, Kayla. Yeah, I'm going down that path. It's only an hour 20, and I'm trying to remember because this was the Universal Phantom, I believe, was in the 40s. This was 62. So, and it gets a little opera heavy at the end because we have to see the young lady who is under the tutelage of the Phantom so we can see that she winds up singing well. But, decent little clip of an hour 20 version of Phantom of the Opera, half the running time of Joel Schumacher's Phantom of the Opera. So there you go. Phantom of the Opera from Hammer Horror, released on the Vault series from Universal. All right, let's go around the horn. Let's find out what has been what is playing around Central Indiana, and then we'll find out what you've been watching recently. We go to the Tibbs Drive-In on Screen 1, The Invitation and Bullet Train. Wait, is that right? No. You know what? You got to click on the dates and let you know. Screen 1 is Honk for Jesus, Save Your Soul, Nope, and Beast. African-American stars in cinema. Okay. Screen 2, DC League of Super Pets and Spider-Man No Way Home, extended cut. Wow, an extended cut. Screen 3, The Invitation and Bodies, Bodies, Bodies. Screen 4, 3,000 Years of Longing and Dragon Ball Super Superhero. That is happening at the Tibbs Drive-In. Over at the Skyline Drive-In, oh, Minions, The Rise of Gru, plus Top Gun, plus the original 1958 The Blob. That is happening Friday. Saturday, you have those three, plus Preacher Man from 1971. Really? Whoa. Hold on it here. Do I have that in from? Yeah. This is a Preacher Man is directed and starring Albert T. Viola. I'm reading from IMDb. Phony backwoods preacher Amos T. Huxley stays in a small North Carolina town long enough to fleece his congregation, swindle the prophets from a moonshine still, and seduce dumb blonde Mary Lou. Mary Lou's ex-boyfriend becomes suspicious of the preacher and gets the local police to investigate his actions. That is the Late Late Show at the Skyline Drive-In on Saturday the 3rd. Go for that. Way to go. I love the fact that places like the Skyline are able to find old, really obscure films that they show on the big screen. So thank you for that. So that is happening over at the Skyline Drive-In. Congratulations to the Art Craft Theater in Franklin. Their 100th anniversary gala is September 10th at the Historic Art Craft Theater in Franklin. You can go to the Art Craft Theater website for more information on that. Wednesday, September 14th at 7:30 p.m., 35mm print of The Graduate on the big screen. Friday and Saturday, 2 and 7:30 p.m., September 16th and 17th, Cool Hand Luke. Great chance to see that on the big screen. Mrs. Sosie and I have been watching The Last Movie Stars, the really cool documentary on HBO about Paul Newman and Joanne Woodward. It was done by Ethan Hawke, and I think we're 4-5 episodes in, and it's fun to hear the stories about the two of them, or as my wife puts it, she was the actress, he was the movie star. He was also an actor, but I know where we're going as far as labels. He was not the perfect charitable god, as we all know and love him for, but I think that's why we still love him nonetheless. But also the other aspect that winds up still working is Ethan Hawke's stories about getting this made. It is based on Paul Newman was going to write his memoirs, his autobiography, and there was a slew of recordings that were done for this. And then he one day, just without any announcement, took the tapes out and burnt them. But there were transcripts. And now Ethan Hawke, during COVID lockdown, was able to assemble a slew of familiar names and actors and family members to talk about and do readings of these transcripts. So the process of making this is also still very effective on top of the story itself. So look for, it's on HBO, The Last Movie Stars. I'm hoping Mrs. Sosie and I can finish that over the weekend. Back to the Art Craft Theater. Wednesday, September 21st at 7:30 p.m., High Fidelity. And then Friday and Saturday, September 23rd and 24th, 2 and 7:30 p.m., Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince. And Wednesday, September 28th at 7:30 p.m., again, the music midweek movie, Repo Man. All that is happening there. At IU Cinema, Tuesday, September 6th, a 4K restoration of 1953's Love Letter. That is part of Legacies of Women in Global Cinema. Thursday, September 8th at 7 p.m., A Different Image and Alma's Rainbow. Exploration of the Body is Home, curated by IU Cinema guest programmer in residency Maya Cade of the Black Film Archive. Friday, September 9th from 2022 at 7 p.m., The Pez Outlaw. The incredibly true story of two men, one international conspiracy, and thousands of Pez dispensers. That's right. That's Friday, September 9th at 7 p.m. They're going to replay it Saturday, September 10th at 4 p.m. And then Saturday, September 10th at 7 p.m., a staff select series choice, UHF. Must be getting ready for that Weird Al biopic. So, and then Sunday, September 11th at 1 o'clock, Abstract Movies and AB, The Life and Work of Albert Bloch, over that at IU Cinema. See over at the Can-Can, The Good Boss, 3,000 Years of Longing, Emily the Criminal, and Bodies, Bodies, Bodies. Coming soon, Stunt Rock from 1978. Rocket Man will be showed as a fundraiser for the Indiana AIDS Walk, hosted by IU Healthcare. Breathless is coming, Vertigo, Women on the Verge, an outdoor family screening of The Iron Giant, the Indie Short Film Showcase is happening, so lots of stuff going on over at Can-Can. One other title that came out from Cohen Video. I got to watch a couple of French crime dramas. I mentioned The Burning Barn last week. And from 1963, I got to watch the Jacques Duret film Symphony of a Massacre. And it's the story of five businessmen, all with various levels of ethical business practices. That's a nice way of putting it. Who find out about a big drug score coming to town, and they all put their money into one giant pot for the deal. put into one giant basket for the deal. And what happens when you can't trust one in your group? Looking at you, Jean Rochefort, who's very good in this. But this is black and white, cool, slick 60s crime drama from France. If you're a fan of Le Samurai, and as I mentioned, the Barn. Guys in suits. Somebody said it was a companion piece to Rafifi, which I get. There's more dialogue in this one, but it's a very calculated, cold, not stiff, but that kind of aspect of cool crime. I know that's we're it sounds like a website, but anyway, it's on Cohen Media. It's a good look to it. I enjoy the French crime dramas of the 60s, and. As a certain somebody once said when watching Hamlet for the first time, this isn't going to end good. Thank you, M. But yeah, it's well worth checking out from Cohen Video, Symphony of a Massacre from 1963. So merci to Jacques Duret there. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. All right, friends. Let's grab a pencil. Let's find out what you've been watching. Shout out to my buddy James at Jim Carlisle Mars, who basically went on Twitter and said, follow Matthew Soucy and check out Film Sociology. Thank you for that, James. And my guys over at Golden Globus Theater, which is the Canon and Canon-related podcast. You might hear me on there soon. Just saying. But they are wrapping up the dystopian month of August. They had done the Charlton Heston triple feature this week, the original Rollerball from 1975. They really make fun of James Caan in this one, and there was some fun dialogue online between Taffa DeVee, myself, and the guys as far as James Caan's non-Sonny Corleone-like performance in Rollerball, but I still love Rollerball. Yeah, great game sequences in the original Rollerball. Never watched a remake. God-awful. But anyway, you can listen to the guys over at Golden Globus. There's that. Okay. All right, friends, grab a pencil. Let's find out what you've been watching this week. We start on Facebook with my buddy Eric Bryant, who is in Indie Bard Fest's production of Lysistrata. I'm on stage with him. It's going to be fun. I'll be screaming about it more when it gets closer, when we open in October. But Wayne writes... Eric writes, Woodstock, 3 days that defined a generation. Thank you. Samantha, also in Lysistrata. I swear there are people who are not in Lysistrata that will be posting. But Samantha writes, Scooby-Doo, the live-action one. Devin writes, sing and sing too. I got to see the Suman boys last week at the Firehouse. It was fun to watch the three of them dining together and the fact that they always contribute to the grab a pencil portion of the film show. I appreciate it. Megan writes, Iron Man. Daniel writes, The Big Sleep. Dustin Suman writes, The Wild One from 1953 and Roma. Amanda goes to the library and takes pictures of DVD covers and apparently her TV screen. TMZ investigates what really happened to Richard Simmons. Also, The Mist and Hearts of Atlantis, plus a return to Salem's Lot. Somebody's on a king kick lately. Taylor writes, Red, The Thin Man, and Gentlemen Prefer Blondes. Jamie writes, Cinderella with Brandy. DC League of Super Pets, Maleficent. Maleficent, Mistress of All Evil, the 2004 Phantom of the Opera. Mine was shorter. The film. Ratatouille, First Wives Club, the live-action Aladdin, and Paws of Fury, Legend of Hank. Nikki, also in Lysistrata, writes Rashomon and My Neighbor Totoro. Doug writes The Frozen North, A Woman of Affairs, The Wild Party, Overboard, and Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Jessica, also in Lysistrata, 3,000 Years of Longing, Nope, Fresh, The Cursed, Pure, and Wounds. Ron writes, watched The Dead Zone again after umpteen years. Did not age well, which surprised me as unusual because I like David Cronenberg. And it's okay, Ron, that happens. Just watch out for scissors. Don writes, Fandango. Ah, thank you, Don. I hope I had some influence on that. Otherwise, I'm glad you got to experience Fandango. I have talked many times on the program about that film. Eric writes, first view, Myrna Loy in Steamboat Quest. Rewatch The Deep, which I hadn't seen since it was in theaters. Not as bad as I remembered, but that doesn't mean it's good. the rest of my viewing has been taken up with finally getting to see ITV's Sharp series from the 90s, starring Sean Bean. Blood, sin, treachery, rousing historical adventure. Huzzah. That's okay. And then John chimed in, if you get a chance to read the Peter Benchley novel, The Deep, the movie actually follows it pretty closely, but I thought the book was more enjoyable. I'm sorry, gang. I'm still thinking about the opening scene from The Deep, and if you've seen The Deep, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Hello, Jackie. Missy writes, Deranged, The Magic of Belle Isle, and Gangsterland. JJ writes, we had a Bridget Fonda-thon this week. Okay. Single white female, singles, bodies rest in motion, point of no return, and Jackie Brown. Good way to end that one. Gretchen writes, Summer of Soul. Gary writes, Going Places, Doctor Strange, Angel and the Bad Man, Star Wars, A New Hope, RoboCop, the remake, and 3,000 Years of Longing. Joshua writes Starship Troopers. Kate writes Tick, Tick, Boom. Robert Muggy writes My Night at Maud's and God Created Woman, as well as John Frankenheimer's Seconds. Helen writes Sweet Home Alabama and Nope. John writes At the Theater, DC League of Super Pets. John also writes Saw Wizard of Oz with the headphones. Did the Dark Side of the Moon Oz sync? Had done it many, many times before, but this was a first being able to do it at a theater, and the art craft was packed. John, I'm glad you had that experience. Congratulations. At home, The Brooklyn Banker, starring Paul Sorvino, Sky Point, Lord of the Rings, Two Towers, and Return of the King, and Atlantic City. This was my second viewing, and my takeaway from this film is that fresh-squeezed lemons keep the skin looking young and fresh. There's way more to that film than that, the lemon scene, John, but although it's a great opening scene. Although not a movie, I watched The Offer, the story of Paramount and The Godfather, and it was really, really enjoyable. And yeah, Atlantic City, Louis Malle's Atlantic City is one of my favorite crime dramas of all time. Lemon scenes nonetheless. And I'm really hoping Criterion does an Atlantic City treatment. They've done other Louis Malle films, so I hope they do this. Brian writes, Monica and I finally checked out The Muppets 2011. Has it really been that long? With Beatrice. some great moments, even if it doesn't quite have the effortless charm of the older Muppet movies, BB loved it. And in some cases, Brian, that's all that matters. So I'm glad you got to enjoy that. Terry writes from a cinema seat, Thor. First viewings, Five Graves to Cairo, Yesterday, Today, and Tomorrow. Oh, hi, Sophia. Rewatches on that same smaller screen, The Thin Man, After the Thin Man, and Before Sunrise, and Before Sunset. Thank you, Terry. Ronald writes, Comes a Horseman, The Shape of Water, and The Third Man. Rachel writes, Full Metal Alchemist, The Revenge of Scar, which was great fun, very well done, and highly recommended. David writes, Star Trek IV and Sweet Smelled Success. I know, David, that could be a double feature. But yeah, I love. Oh, and did watch Casablanca again. Thank you, David. I'm glad you got to experience Sweet Smelled Success. That's another favorite. David writes, Casablanca in my film lit class and a stand-up special from Bill Burr live at Red Rocks. And finally, Zachariah writes, Shane, Giant, Vertigo, and Sweet 16. And there you go, friends. That's what you've been watching this week. So hopefully you got inspired to watch some titles of some kind. And hopefully you've been able to watch, or you will be able to watch, films that are good films that are new, or at least new to you, as well as falling back on old favorites. I know we have a holiday coming up. Well, some of us have a holiday. Some of us are going to be on the air. But anyway, hope you have a good, safe, long weekend. Friends, some words to live by.
Silent breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
Go see a good movie. You deserve it. There's plenty out there. Don't forget, Golan Globus' treatment of Rollerball is happening, and we'll do this again next week. Thank you for listening. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. Good afternoon, Fort Myers. Good afternoon, California. Good afternoon, Michigan.
I can't believe you let her watch Manos. Is she scarred for life?
Let's put it this way.
What parent are you?
When I wake her up, I vocalize the theme to wake her up to get her ready to school.
Oh, you're a terrible father.
We'll do it live.
Okay.
We'll do it live!